Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. Since the advent of DNA testing in the 1980s, U.S. courts have come to recognize that wrongful convictions are all too common. Some 1,600 supposed criminals have been found innocent after all. Now, prosecutorial offices around the country have been opening wrongful conviction units. The latest is the biggest of all, the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office, which prosecuted 71,000 felony defendants last year. Jackie Lacey is the district attorney. Thank you very much for being on Which Way LA.
How are you, Warren? It's good to hear from you again.
Well, you've got $1 million from the Board of Supervisors. You're going to assign 3 deputy district attorneys, 1 senior investigator, and 1 paralegal to what you call the Conviction Review Unit. What are they going to do?
Well, first of all, you should know that there'll be more than that. But basically what they'll do is the way the process is going to work is they're going to screen out any claims where there isn't newly discovered evidence, newly discovered credible evidence, and they'll do a preliminary review, and then they'll send it to a trial lawyer and a head deputy to look at who was involved in the original case, and they'll, in the meantime, be conducting interviews of witnesses and law enforcement officials, and then from there, if they see where there is credible and newly discovered evidence the person is innocent, they'll then send it to the Conviction Review Committee, which is comprised of senior-level managers, and the committee will be headed by the chief deputy or the chief executive officer, who will review what's there and make the call.
Do you have any way of estimating how many cases this process may look at and how many may turn out to reveal wrongful convictions?
Well, we don't at the outset. I know that we'll probably get a number of claims filed. Normally, they'll be by inmates who are representing themselves. And, you know, if you've ever seen those, they handwrite them out. But we anticipate that many of those that are filed at the very beginning will not be people who are making or claiming there's any newly discovered or credible evidence. They'll be just saying, like I said before at the trial, I was not the right guy or I was not guilty. So we'll screen those out. But we anticipate probably a dozen will come through where we'll look in a year's time in which we'll look at it and we'll say, you know, there could be something to this claim. There is new evidence, DNA, or perhaps the witness, you know, there's some issue that has come forward where the witness we relied on in the past was not reliable, things of that nature. So the bottom line is our lawyers that are going to be chosen for this Conviction Review Unit, known as the CRU, will be experienced prosecutors who we trust with this very important task.
Will you look at cases where it's claimed that there was inadequate representation by defense counsel?
No. This unit is strictly for the I didn't do it or you have the wrong guy kind of a defense. We won't look at inadequate assistance of counsel. We won't be looking at self-defense cases. Basically, we'll be looked, because we feel like there's already an avenue for those cases to be looked at by the appellate court. But this is purely to look at cases where someone says, I'm not the right person who did this. I did not do this crime. It's someone else. And here's some new evidence that we found that shows we didn't.
What caused you to do this now? Have there been recent cases that you concerned you?
No, I've been thinking about this actually for a number of years, and we'd actually discussed it within the office after I got elected for about 2.5 years. I, like everyone else, read the paper, read anytime there's a case throughout the country where I see someone was wrongfully convicted and there's a doubt. I'm not immune to that. I've looked at that and often thought that there ought to be an avenue in the prosecutor's office to look at these cases very carefully, that it's right within our mission.
There's been a lot of publicity recently about Obie Anthony. L.A. is now paying him $8 million. He spent 17 years behind bars for a crime he didn't commit. Was that a motivator for you?
No. You know, the civil case had nothing to do with my decision. My decision is motivated by the fact that, for the most part, Warren, when prosecutors convict someone, they convict the right guy. The evidence is all there. But there could be a small percentage, because this is all based on the human factor, the human factor of making arrests, the human factor of making identifications, the human factor of having a judge or a jury determine whether someone is guilty. And so there's going to be some margin of error. And my position is that if there is someone who is wrongfully convicted, who is doing time in prison, then I'd rather us take a second look at that and free the wrongfully convicted as opposed to just saying, too bad, so sad, you had your trial, and I don't care if there's any new evidence, case closed, and it's over. I just don't think that's right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on to tell us about it.
You're welcome. You take care.
You too. Jackie Lacey, Los Angeles County's district attorney. Alex Simpson is associate director of the California Innocence Project at California Western School of Law in San Diego. His organization reviews about 2,000 innocence claims every year, and it's had 18 exonerations since 1999. Alex Simpson, welcome to our program.
Hi, Warren. How are you?
Good. I assume that with the largest prosecutorial agency in the country deciding to set up the conviction review unit, you think that's a good thing.
This is a great thing. I mean, obviously, Los Angeles is one of the largest counties in terms of criminal justice in California, and we are, you know, kind of beside ourselves that Los Angeles has decided to take the lead in such an important issue.
Are they covering enough cases if they don't, for example, look at cases involving ineffective defense counsel?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that when you're looking at any type of review of cases, you've got to figure out, you know, what's the best possible way to approach it. I think Jackie's approach is absolutely warranted. It's one of the things that you really do need to make sure you have nothing but the best possible cases that could be reversed. And if a district attorney is making a decision that, hey, we got it wrong, or that we now, even though we stood by this conviction, you know, 10 years ago, now we're willing to reverse ourselves, you know, it really does take some compelling evidence, and that's where, you know, new DNA evidence, that type of thing would come in.
On the committee that Jackie Lacey described would be, apparently, the prosecuting attorneys in cases that are up for review. Is it likely that they would find that they made errors or that there were things about the case that they should have done that they did wrong?
Well, I think it's important. It is true that part of the steps that, or at least one of the steps that the conviction integrity unit is that, you know, going back to the district attorney who originally prosecuted the case to see, you know, what their take is on it. And obviously, we have every confidence that the district attorney, if they are, you know, fine and upstanding and seeking justice in the case, will also see that, hey, listen, if there's new evidence that I didn't consider, that the jury didn't consider, then we should take another look at the case. You know, that's just something that I think is good business, good practice to go back to the person who knows the case the best.
There are in the neighborhood of 1,000 prosecutors in the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. Do you think that this will make them less likely to try to railroad somebody?
I think the idea that prosecutors will kind of ignore evidence that a person's innocent or withhold evidence that a person's innocent, it's very, very uncommon. It's a, you know, a fairly small number of people who really just kind of throw the law book out the window. But hopefully this conviction integrity unit will make sure that people are really thinking about all of the evidence in the case when they're thinking about whether to go forward with a prosecution.
What's the most common reason for exonerations?
Most exonerations come from other things that don't have to do with new evidence, like ineffective assistance of counsel. You know, and your attorney just simply did not present evidence that showed that you were innocent. But there's also issues like false evidence. If somebody comes forward to testify and later on you find out that that evidence was incorrect, those are the types of things that usually get a conviction reversed.
And Jackie Lacey said that such things as an inadequate defense counsel have other processes available. You can go to court over that?
You certainly can, and we've had cases in Los Angeles where, you know, we've gone forward with ineffective assistance of counsel claims. I mean, that's a fairly common thing. It's one of the kind of the dark side of public defense work is that Most defense attorneys have huge numbers of cases and can't really, you know, process every single case to the fullest extent that they want to.
Those cases, though, take a long time to make their way through court, don't they? And it turns out that people have been in prison even longer than necessary because the process takes so long.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. The wheels of justice grind slowly, and they grind even more slowly when you're talking about trying to get a conviction reversed. And so, they can take years to resolve. And obviously, you know, one of the cases you mentioned, O.B. Anthony, that was a very positive resolution, but it did take time.
All right, Alex Simpson, Associate Director of the California Innocence Project, thanks so much for being on our program.
Thank you.
In a moment, is there a new wind blowing at L.A. City Hall? David Rue is in the studio of Which Way L.A.
Subscribe to the Which Way L.A. podcast at kcrw.com or download the KCRW app, available anywhere podcasts are found and on all mobile devices.
Warren Ollenbeck with Which Way L.A. David Rue was sworn in yesterday, one of two newly elected members of the Los Angeles City Council. He is the first Korean-American ever to serve and only the second member of Asian descent. He's recently been a hospital administrator, and he styled himself as an outsider when he ran against City Hall veteran Carolyn Ramsey. His district includes Sherman Oaks, then stretches over the Hollywood Hills to Silver Lake, Hancock Park, the Miracle Mile, and a small part of Koreatown. It's relatively affluent, and it's engaged in local politics, and Rue's claims to be an outsider have created high expectations that he will shake things up. David Rue is here in our studio. Welcome to Which Way L.A.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to be here.
How are you going to shake things up?
Well, you know, I'm not as concerned about shaking things up, but just doing my job. And it's actually listening to the people who voted me in, listening to neighborhoods, and making more accessible.
The neighborhood wanted you to shake things up.
Well, the neighborhoods wanted to be heard. And their definition of shaking things up is, please listen to what our expectations are, what our interests are. And it seems like a very basic premise, listening, but it's a lot harder than it sounds. And that's what they meant by shaking it up.
You don't have any particular goals that you want to accomplish beyond listening to your constituents?
Oh, no. As you mentioned, there are many particular goals and three specific goals that were reiterated throughout the district. So when the community and the neighborhood says, listen, you know, listen to us, they were predominantly saying, listen to us about their concerns about development. And of course, there are two types of development, the large scale, big box developments, which, depending on who you talk to, was not that they're just against it, but it was more about why are our concerns? Are our concerns about traffic mitigation, parking, all of these not addressed? And of course, the secondary type of development, mansionization. We've heard that throughout, which is disrupting the fabric of the neighborhoods. And they're saying, what's going on here? You got to have some rules in place. Or there are rules in place. Why aren't you following them? The secondary concerns is, it's not just for Council District 4 and the communities that I represent, but it's throughout the city of L.A. The need for investment in infrastructure, whether it's streets, sidewalks, potholes, you know, water mains, tree trimming. People are saying, what's going on here? Why aren't you doing this? And many community folks have ideas on how to best do that. And the third thing is access. Access to government. Access to your council member. One of the key things I did was try to go to and meet the actual neighbors, voters, one-on-one. And when I met with them, they used to tell me about their problems, from complex to simple. And I would say, and they would tell me how they went to the, called City Hall, called 211, got no response. They were frustrated. So I said, did you call your council member? Most of them said, why? Why do I need to call my council member? People don't even know what a council member does.
Can you name specific developments that you're concerned about right now that you want to do something about?
Well, I can't mention some of the, well, I mean, there's several, but I could give you examples of like the Spaghetti Factory building, which is not in my district, or the Millennium Hotel. There's lawsuits pending on those. And on top, when it comes to like the Spaghetti Factory, the judges has ordered the tenants to be evicted. I mean, that doesn't help anybody.
Okay, but they're not in your district. Mm-hmm. Isn't it true that council members, and haven't you heard this, pretty much allow each other to do what they want in their own districts? Everybody is the czar in that district. So you can deal with stuff in your district, but you just mentioned developments elsewhere.
Right. So what I'm saying is we want to prevent lawsuits. We want to prevent conflict. And the best way to do it, and that's the role of the council member, to intervene early, to get the community inputs in early and explain to everyone what's going on. You know, and there's rules in place. They need to be followed. And it's about trying to curtail it before it gets out of hand.
One of the people you've said you're going to have as an informal advisor is Bernard Parks, former chief of police, now termed out of the council himself. Here's what he says about the way the city council works. The way policy is developed now, it's more cliques and more private conversations. Very complicated and important issues come before the council, and not one person has a question. Your perception is they must have discussed it elsewhere. The impression is somebody's already discussed it off camera, and people have been told what to do. He has said that to Tom Labonge, the man you're replacing, would go to Mayor Garcetti and ask him how he should vote. How are you going to be an outsider in a system like that?
Well, just shedding a light, being transparent as possible, asking the questions that need to be asked. Councilman Bernard Parks is someone I respect tremendously, who has given me good guidance throughout the years, and there will be many more others that I respect and I'll be seeking. Making a proper decision, you need to get as many sides of the story as possible. It's always not one-sided. There's not, in many complex cases, it's two, three, four different versions of the story. So it's about first getting all the facts so you can make a proper decision. And it's more about the process than the result. Because as long as the process is consistent, fair, and legal, then shows everybody where everybody stands and what to expect.
Consistent, fair, and legal, does it have to be open?
Oh, and open. Transparent is that's one of the key things we talked about. And I think that's what the community, when they said they want change, when they want me to shake up the system, they're merely saying, make it transparent. Make the system what it's supposed to be.
Okay, here's Bernard Parks saying that it's not transparent, that in fact they want to make everything look unanimous because if they all work together, then they don't have to hang separately, quoting the former chief of police, Daryl Gates. Herb Wesson is famously the president of the council running it in that manner. He didn't endorse you when you ran, even though you both worked at one time for Yvonne Brathwaite Burke. How are you going to get by if you don't have the president of the council on your side and if you want to make things public and he wants to keep things private?
Well, you know, I mean, it's not just the president of the city council. The mayor and the rest of the city council did endorse me. So, but I think, you know, especially at our swearing-in ceremony yesterday and subsequent conversations I've had, the council, the mayor has embraced me with open arms. Election is over. You know, I mean, people pick sides. Sometimes your side doesn't win. Now all that is done. We got to move forward and work together. So,
are you worried that they might try to co-opt you and get you to be part of the system, the very system which you said you'd be an outsider for?
Well, as you said earlier, I need seven other council members to get anything passed. So it is about working collegially with your colleagues. But at the same time, if a question needs to be asked, I am not scared to ask it. I mean, I base my decision on trying to get all the facts, all the correct facts. And if asking a dumb question is the wrong thing to do, then I have no problem with doing that.
Back to former Councilman Parks, that's what he said got him in trouble. He ended up on a lot of 14-1 votes because he kept asking a lot of embarrassing questions.
Yeah, well, you know, and I've spoken to Councilman Parks as well, and I think it's about finding that fine balance. But, you know, I the council works hard, and I think there's a lot of – we need to make it more transparent and open.
Let's just talk a bit, if I can, about your background. You didn't run as an Asian candidate, but you certainly had support from the Korean-American community, even though a very small part of it is in your district. Most of it is in Herb Weston's district. So do you have a special debt to pay, do you think, to those Asian Americans who were supportive? Mike Wu, when he was councilman 22 years ago, said that he got an awful lot of requests from that direction.
Well, it's undeniable. I am humbled. And I am humbled to be the first Korean American council member and the first Asian American to be here in over a generation. And I'm proud to lead my community through these doors to take our rightful place, sharing the leadership of Los Angeles. But I am more proud of the fact that I was elected in a district, in a neighborhood that had very few Asian Americans. And I was chosen not because of my ethnic heritage. I was chosen because I made a commitment to the people of the Fourth to put our communities first. So, yes, I do owe it to the neighborhoods and the communities, and that's what I stand to do. That's what I pledge to do, and that's what I'm going to do, stand up for the community.
You were sworn in yesterday. What's the first thing you want to do as a councilman?
And it's funny you asked that. As we speak, we're trying to work on a motion to deliver on one of our first campaign pledges, which is to create a task force of community members to help oversee and have input on how discretionary funds will be spent.
Discretionary funds, each council member gets how much?
I'm still trying to get that number narrowed down, and I think once I take office on July 1st, that's when all the information will be coming to me, but it looks like roughly over $1 million.
A lot of council members don't tell people what they're doing with that money. Do you intend to do that?
That was my campaign pledge. That was one of the key things that the constituency asked for when they asked for change. They meant change in this manner, and I think it's the constituents of the 4th District's taxpayer, it's their taxpaying dollars. And I think they have all the right to see how much comes in, how we're going to spend it, and even take part in making decisions on how we're going to spend that money.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming out here to our studios and talking to us at KCRW. And congratulations on your swearing in, and good luck.
Thank you so very much, and it was exciting to be here. I hope I did well, and you invite me back.
Okay, we will indeed. The newly elected L.A. Councilman David Rue. Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way L.A. Facebook page in a moment on this year's final decision day at the U.S. Supreme Court. Who's really in charge on To the Point?